is giving us a chance for equality. Don't you see? If we go to war, we will lose, without a shadow of a doubt. Hominum's army alone outnumbers the dwarven population by 10 to 1. Most dwarves of fighting age are on their way to be trained on the elven front, surrounded by veteran soldiers and as far from Corsilum as is possible. Do you think you can storm the palace with 100 or so dwarven men left?
If we must, shouted Harkon, spurring on shouts of agreement from his supporters.
What happens then? The news of our assault will reach the generals in the north in a matter of days, carried by flying demons. The northern generals will slaughter our young warriors without hesitation. Even if we planned it with them, what then? Will 1,000 untrained dwarves try and take over the entire northern front? Even without muskets, the battle mages would tear our warriors apart in minutes. The king himself is one of the most powerful summoners to have ever walked the earth. Yet you presume to take him hostage? We wouldn't stand a chance.
So what? I'd rather die fighting against them than alongside them. I bet they think you're a joke, wandering around with that little demon of yours, Attila said.
That is what I thought too, when I first arrived at Vokans. But I was wrong. There are good people there. Hell, the first day I arrived, one of them showed me an anvil card,
Othello replied.
The anvils? They are just humans who pity us. Nothing more. It is but a hobby to them. The elders didn't trust them enough to even bring them to this meeting,
Attila retorted.
Neither would I. Not if we are going to discuss open war against their people. We are slowly gaining allies. First the Pashas, and now the Anvils, are starting a movement in our support. Even the king has said he is willing to revisit the laws and rein in the Pinkertons, once we prove that we can be trusted. But what do we do? We do the very thing that would prevent him from ever supporting us. Discuss rebellion.
Othello spat on Attila's boots in fury.
You are no true dwarf. You don't deserve the dwarven sigil that is stamped upon your back. I am ashamed to call you brother,
Attila shouted. He tore Othello's shirt away to reveal the tattoo on Othello's back. With a roar, Othello grabbed Attila by the throat, and they spun around the stage, throttling one another. Solomon moved to help, but then stopped, as if Othello had commanded him to freeze. Uhtred burst onto the platform, ripping the brawling twins apart. Behind him, a procession of white-haired dwarves mounted the stage. They were old and venerable, with long, chalky beards that were tucked into their belts.
They must be the Dwarven Council, Silver breathed in Fletcher's ear.
Fletcher nodded and urged Ignatius to listen closely, for these dwarves did not seem like the type to shout and scream. The room was in a deep, respectful silence. Even Attila had calmed himself, bowing his head in reverence. The oldest of the elders stepped forward and opened his arms wide.
Do we not all want freedom for our children? If we cannot stand united in the face of adversity, then we have already lost.
The dwarves began to seat themselves, many looking at their feet in shame.
We have heard all we need to hear. There are many hotheads here tonight, but the decision we are about to make will not be taken lightly. I ask you this. What good will it do to die bravely in pursuit of freedom? 14 times the dwarves have rebelled, and 14 times we have been brought to the brink of extinction. You young dwarves do not remember the slaughter we faced in the last uprising. Every time we lose, more freedoms are taken from us. More dwarven blood is shed.
There were nods of agreement from the crowd.
I see two paths before us. One is well-trodden, yet every time we have taken it, we end up back where we started, defeated and bloodied. But there is a second path. I do not know where it leads, or what dangers there are along the way. But I know in my heart that it is better to take the path of uncertain fate than the one of glorious yet certain defeat. There will be no war, my friends. We will honor our agreement with the king.
Fletcher was flooded with relief. Othello had snuck out to argue against rebellion, not support it. Not only that, but he had managed to win the elders over. He did not want to think what Othello would have done if the decision had gone the other way. But it was not worth thinking about. Everything was going to be okay.
Fletcher, what was that?
Silver gasped, jerking Fletcher's arm. There were torches ahead of them, moving through the trees at speed. They ducked behind the cliff and watched, their hearts in their mouths. There were 10 men, each one armed with a musket and a sword. Their leader was wheezing with effort. Even in the darkness, Fletcher could tell that he was an abnormally fat man.
Are you certain this is the right cave?
One of the men asked, holding his torch high to illuminate the area. Fletcher was hit by a wash of cold as the light revealed their faces.
I'm dead certain, Grindel said.
43.
Those are the men that kidnapped me,
Silver hissed, pointing at the armored soldiers now.
I know. I would recognize the fat bald one anywhere,
Fletcher replied, gripping the hilt of his kopesh.
His name is Grindel. He's the one who was going to perform the execution. I thought you killed him. Guess he must have a thick skull. There are too many of them,
Silver muttered, but Fletcher could see her tensing, as if he were preparing to jump into the fray. Behind them, Fletcher could hear a low growl as Sariel sensed the elf's agitation.
Try to stay calm. We need to find out why they're here.
Fletcher forced his anger away and leaned over the shadowed parapet to listen.
I don't understand why we don't just wait out here and ambush them when they come out,
one of the men was complaining.
Because this is just one of 5 exits,
Grindel replied, sitting down on a boulder.
Not to mention that 3 of them lead back to the tunnels under the Dwarven Quarter.
As the other men gathered around, the light from their torches showed Grindel's bandaged shoulder, still injured from Ignatius's fireball.
I should have made sure he was dead,
Silver whispered through gritted teeth. Fletcher laid a calming hand on her shoulder. If it came down to a fight, he didn't feel confident about their chances. There were 10 men, each clad in boiled leather armor. It would allow them fast movement while still protecting them from light sword strokes. Fletcher eyed their muskets. His feeble shield spell wasn't going to help him tonight.
What are we waiting for, then?
Another man asked, peering into the dark depths of the cave.
Did you not pay any attention in the briefing?
Grindel growled, reaching up and gripping the speaker by the front of his breastplate. He dragged the man down to his level.
There are several hundred of Lord Forsyth's troops gathering at the other accessible exit,
Grindel spat, spraying the speaker's face with saliva.
We go in when they do, which will be when the horn sounds, around 5 minutes from now. Or did you think 10 men against 100 dwarves was the plan all along?
Fletcher's heart froze. This was what he had overheard Tarquin and Isadora talking about. It was not Sarah's family that was in danger, but the dwarves.
5 minutes, Silver breathed. We have to do something.
Fletcher assessed the options, his eyes darting from the men to the cave entrance. There was not enough time. fighting Grindel's soldiers would take too long. If they tried to get past, they would barely make it into the cave mouth before a musket ball burst through their shoulder blades. Even if by some miracle they made it, they would still need to convince the dwarven guards of what was happening.
"If only Ignatius could talk,"
Silver muttered, watching the dwarves on the scrying crystal. They were still there, milling around and discussing the decision amongst themselves.
"He doesn't have to,"
Fletcher said with sudden realization. He needed the dwarves to know that they were under attack. So why not attack them? He sent his orders to Ignatius and felt a flash of confusion and fear from the demon. As his intentions became clear to Ignatius, the fear was replaced with steely resolve.
"Watch,"
he whispered to Silver. Ignatius called down the stalactite, wrapping his tail around the tip and digging the spiked tip into the soft stone. He hung there like a bat, stretching his neck to get as close to the dwarves as possible.
"Now, Ignatius,"
Fletcher murmured, feeling his vision intensify as the mana flared inside them. Ignatius unleashed a thick plume of fire, a roiling wave of orange flame that billowed just short of the elderly dwarves below. It singed their heads, filling the room with the acrid stench of burning hair. Then, with a chirr of excitement, Ignatius was back on the ceiling and scampering back to Fletcher.
"We're under attack!"
Halcon roared as the room descended into panic.
"Retreat to the caves! Protect the elders!"
The boar riders returned from their posts at the exits, herding the milling crowd of dwarves to a tunnel that led down into the earth.
"It worked," Silver whispered. "Fletcher, you genius!"
Suddenly, a hurlbat axe came flying from the crowd, embedding itself just a few inches from Ignatius.
"A demon from Vulcans! Treachery!"
It was Attila, still standing on the podium with Othello.
"Who did you tell about this meeting?"
"Nobody! I swear it!"
Othello shouted back, his face filled with confusion as he recognized Ignatius.
"I know this demon. Its owner is a friend to the dwarves."
"Then he won't mind me killing it for him,"
Attila howled, snatching another throwing axe from his belt. He jumped from the podium and began to sprint towards Ignatius, who had frozen in fear.
"No, Attila! Stay with the others!"
Othello shouted, running after him. Ignatius screeched and scrambled down the tunnel, narrowly avoiding Attila's next throw.
"Stop him, Fletcher! You'll lead them to Grindel!"
Silver whispered, tugging on his sleeve. But it was too late. The dwarf twins were running directly beneath Ignatius now.
"Get ready," Fletcher whispered. "We're going to have to fight."
Silver nodded, drawing her stiletto from a scabbard at her thigh. Sariel sensed her mood and crouched, ready to leap on the men below. They waited with bated breath as the seconds ticked by.
"Footsteps!"
Grindel said hoarsely, pointing at the tunnel entrance. Fletcher could hear them now, too, echoing down the cave as Attila and Othello ran on.
"Two rows! Front rank kneeling, second rank standing! Fire on my command!"
Grindel ordered, drawing his sword and lifting it high above his head. The steps were getting closer now. Fletcher could hear the clatter of another axe as it missed Ignatius once again.
"I'll shield the entrance. You flash them with weird light to throw off their aim. I don't know if my shield will be strong enough,"
Silver said. She was already drawing the shield symbol in the air. Moments later, and she was flowing opaque light onto the ground in front of her, pooling it as if it were molten amber.
"Ready!"
Grindel growled. The men raised their muskets, pointing them down the cave. Fletcher pulled mana from Ignatius. It was harder with the distance between them, but soon his body buzzed with power. In his mana-filled vision, the torchlight glowed a deep orange.
"Aim!"
Grindel uttered, lowering his sword by a foot. The footsteps no longer echoed, they were that close. Any second now, and the two dwarves would come into view. Grindel's sword fell.
"Fire!
Now!"
Silver shouted, sending a glistening square of white shield below. Fletcher fired a blast of blue light into the gunman's eyes, blinding them as the muskets crackled, belching black smoke into a haze in front of them. Then Sariel burst through the ranks, scattering them like ninepins. She leaped onto the nearest man's chest and began to savage his throat. Fletcher jumped from the cliff with a yell, stabbing down with his kopesh. It took a fallen man through the stomach. Then it was on to the next dazed opponent, cutting him down at the neck. He could hear Silver screaming behind him, then the gurgle of a man with his throat cut. Ignatius dropped onto Fletcher's shoulder from above and blew flames at a man who was charging at him, sword raised.
"My eyes!"
the man screamed, falling to his knees. Silver darted past and stabbed him through the skull. Sariel bounded back to them, the fur around her snout a grisly mess of red and pulp. Silver grabbed her by the neck fur and dragged her back to the cave mouth to stand beside Fletcher. There were five men left, including Grindel. They had regrouped, spreading in a wide fan that kept their enemies trapped in the cave. Othello and Attila arrived, gasping as they tried to catch their breath. The shield must have worked.
"It's an ambush, Attila! Fletcher and Silver are on our team!"
Othello muttered. Solomon rumbled in agreement.
"I'd rather kill five men than one boy."
Attila grasped the sword from one of the fallen men.
"I'll fight beside you, for now."
He handed Othello a tomahawk from his waist.
"You were always better with it than me. Show these humans what a true dwarf can do."
Then Grindel threw a torch into the cave, illuminating their faces. He spat in disgust.
"Bell filth! I should have killed you as soon as I had the chance. If Lord Forsyth hadn't made us do it publicly, you'd be rotting in the ground right now."
Fletcher froze at the mention of the Forsyth name, realizing who had been behind Silver's kidnapping. It was no coincidence that the Forsyth twins were with her when she was taken. He shook the revelation from his thoughts, focusing on the task at hand.
"I'm going to disembowel you," Grindel snarled, jabbing his sword at her stomach. "I always wondered if elves have the same insides."
"That shoulder looks painful," Fletcher jeered. "How would you like it today? Medium rare? Or well done?"
Grindel ignored his comment and smirked.
"Reload your muskets, boys. It'll be like shooting rats in a barrel."
"Not so fast," Attila said.
"First one to reach for their musket gets an axe through their face."
He took the last hurlbat axe from his belt and twirled it in his fingers. The remaining men looked from Grindel to their muskets on the ground. They didn't move.
"It's seven of us against five of you, and three of ours are demons. Do yourself a favor and go back to whatever hole you crawled out of."
Grindel smirked and pointed his sword at the cave behind them. In the distance, Fletcher could hear the sound of a horn, the sign for Forsyth's men to attack.
"If I keep you here long enough, reinforcements are going to arrive. They'll cut you down like dogs."
"If," Fletcher said, taking a step forward. But he realized Grindel had a point. The distant shouts from Forsyth's soldiers echoed in the tunnel behind him. When Grindel didn't charge in with them, they would come and investigate. Fletcher needed to get out of there right now. Fighting could take far too long. Fletcher flared a ball of weird light into existence, feeding it mana until it was the size of a man's head. It throbbed with a dull pulse, glaring in the gloom of the cave's entrance. He propelled it at Grindel, who edged away from it.
"Have you ever seen what a mana burn looks like, Grindel? You think real fire was bad? Wait until you feel your flesh peel from your bones when the raw mana touches your skin. I hear the pain is unimaginable."
Fletcher bluffed. He knew full well that a weird light would dissipate as soon as it touched anything solid, with no ill effects. Grindel didn't know that, though. Silver and Othello followed suit, sending smaller balls of weird light zooming around Grindel's head. He ducked, batting at them with his sword.
Run home, Grindel! Fletcher laughed. You're out of your league! Count yourself lucky that we let you live!
Grindel howled his frustration, bawling at the sky. Finally, he stepped aside, then motioned for his men to do the same. Fletcher bowed low with exaggerated theatricality, then led the others past them. He kept his weird light floating above Grindel's head. It was important to keep up the appearance of being in confident control.
Well done, Fletcher, Othello whispered. That was great acting. I learned from the best,
Fletcher whispered back, remembering their encounter with the Pinkertons. They walked as quickly as possible, aware of Grindel's malevolent stare boring into their backs.
What's all that racket, Grindel? The men said they heard gunshots!
A booming voice shouted from the cave. The entrance was lit with torches as armored figures streamed out of it.
Run!
Fletcher shouted. A musket ball plucked at his sleeve and shattered on a boulder ahead of them. More shots followed, buzzing overhead like angry wasps. It was impossible to see more than a few feet ahead. All Fletcher could hear was their ragged breathing as they stumbled in the darkness. Weird lights were out of the question. The cover of night was all that protected them from the volleys of fire that crashed in the distance behind them. A bullet whistled close by, and then there was a thud as a body fell in front of him. Fletcher tripped in a tangle of limbs, sprawling in the mud with whoever had fallen.
It's my leg,
Attila groaned.
I've been hit.
They were alone. Silver and Othello must have lost them in the mad rush to escape.
Leave me! I will cover your retreat!
Attila choked, pushing Fletcher away from him.
Not a chance. I'm going to get you out of here, even if I have to carry you!
Fletcher replied stubbornly, trying to pull Attila to his feet.
I said leave me! I will die fighting like a true dwarf!
Attila growled, shaking Fletcher off.
Is that how a true dwarf dies? Shot in the mud, like a dog? I thought you dwarves were tougher than that,
Fletcher said, layering his voice with contempt. Anger seemed to be what drove this dwarf, and he would use that to his advantage.
You little prig! Let me die in peace!
Attila roared, shoving Fletcher back into the mud.
If you want to die, then fine, but not tonight. If they capture you, they can use you as proof of a secret meeting here. Don't do this to your people. Don't give the Forsythe the satisfaction.
Attila snarled with frustration, then took a deep breath.
We'll do it your way. But if they catch up with us, there will be no surrender. We fight to the death.
I wouldn't have it any other way,
Fletcher replied, hauling the dwarf to his feet. It was hard going, as their height difference didn't allow Fletcher to put the dwarf's arm around his shoulders. Worse still, the shouts of their pursuers were getting louder and louder. Unlike Fletcher and Attila, they had torches to light their way. They carried on for what seemed like hours, then Attila stumbled and fell to the ground.
You're just going to have to carry me. It will be faster that way,
Attila gasped. The injury was taking its toll, and Fletcher could feel that the dwarf's breeches were soaking wet with blood. He knew that the dwarf would have had to swallow a lot of pride to make such a request.
Come on, jump up on my back, Fletcher murmured.
He grunted as Attila's weight settled, then trudged on, breathing through gritted teeth. Ignatius chittered encouragement at his new riding companion, lapping at the dwarf's face. Without warning, the area was lit by a glow of dim blue light. A globe of weird light had appeared in the sky, hundreds of feet above. It hung there like a second moon, spinning above the clouds.
Was that you?
Attila asked.
No, it wouldn't be Othello or Silver either. The Forsythe men must have a battle mage with them. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Zacharias himself. That weird light is huge,
Fletcher replied. He looked around them, and his heart dropped. The surrounding landscape looked almost identical, and he realized that he was hopelessly lost. But if he didn't make it back to safety soon, Attila would not last the night. The shouts were in the distance now, but they were by no means safe. If the enemy battle mage had a flying demon, it might stop them.
"Stop right there!"
a voice shouted. A man stepped out from the shadows, pointing a musket at them. Again, Fletcher cursed his inability to perform a shield spell.
"No surrender,"
Attila muttered in his ear. But the dwarf's voice was slurred and faint. Fletcher doubted Attila could take more than a few steps before collapsing. Ignatius jumped from Fletcher's neck and hissed. The man ignored him and continued to point the musket directly at Fletcher's face.
"Keep that thing away from me, or I fire," he said,
jerking the muzzle threateningly. Fletcher lifted his hand and flared a ball of weird light into existence.
"I can whip this into your skull faster than any bullet. Drop the weapon, and there will be no trouble."
"I'm a soldier, you idiot. I know what a weird light is. Drop the dwarf on the ground and... ah!"
The man yelped and clapped his free hand to his neck. A dull brown mite buzzed above him and then flew in a circle around Fletcher's head.
"Valens," Fletcher breathed.
Somehow, the little demon had found them. The man fell over sideways, his musket still raised. It was as if he had been frozen.
"Major Goodwin wasn't kidding about a scarab sting," Fletcher marveled.
Valens emitted a loud buzz and then flew back and forth in the air. Fletcher watched him for a moment, then realized that the little demon wanted him to follow.
"Just a little longer, Attila," Fletcher murmured. "We're going to make it."
44. Attila was unconscious by the time they arrived at the citadel, but he was still breathing. The dwarf's leg was stiff with clotted blood, but in the darkness, Fletcher could not see the extent of the damage. He wrapped the wound as tightly as he could with a strip of cloth from Attila's shirt, then followed Valens over the drawbridge.
"Where do we go now?"
Fletcher whispered to the hovering demon above him. The mite buzzed encouragingly and stopped halfway up the eastern staircase. Fletcher eyed the steep steps with apprehension.
"I don't know if I can do it,"
he groaned, hefting Attila's body. Sensing Fletcher's mood, Ignatius leaped to the ground.
"Thanks, buddy. That's much lighter,"
Fletcher murmured half-heartedly, rubbing the demon under his chin. Valens led him up the stairs, the thrum of his wings guiding Fletcher in the darkness. He did not risk a weird light. If Rook caught him with Attila, it would be reported to King Alfric. They stopped on the top floor, then continued up to the northeastern tower. By this time, Fletcher's knees were close to buckling, but he continued on doggedly. Somehow, Valens had a plan. Finally, they reached a set of heavy wooden doors at the very top of the tower, and Fletcher realized they were at the infirmary. Before he had a chance to knock, the doors swung open and a frantic Silver appeared.
"You're okay! We thought you had died!"
Silver sobbed, burying her face in Fletcher's chest. Othello stared at him, his face pale and streaked with tears. The dwarf rushed to Fletcher's side and took Attila into his arms. Fletcher patted Silver's head awkwardly and looked around the room. There were several rows of beds, their frames rusting and covered in dust. Three newer beds lay close by the door, with Sariel resting beneath them. As Othello laid Attila on one of them, Fletcher realized that they were not all empty. Lovat lay motionless on the nearest bed. She was so still that she might have been a corpse, were it not for the almost imperceptible rise and fall of her chest. She was dressed in a nightgown, with her long black hair falling about her head like a halo. The others had lit the torches and candles on either side of her bed, which cast the room in a dull orange light.
"Valens led you here too?"
he asked, as the mite landed on Lovett's chest.
"He found us about an hour ago, then flew straight out of the window as soon as we got to this room,"
Silver said, wiping a tear from her eye.
"He must have sensed you were in trouble."
"I don't think it's just Valens we need to thank," Fletcher said, stroking the beetle demon's carapace.
What do you mean? Silver asked.
Arcturus told me that some summoners can learn how to see and hear through their demon, effectively using their own mind as a scrying stone. I doubt a mite could have done what Valens did tonight without someone guiding him.
Were you with him, Captain Lovett?
Fletcher looked at her immobile face. The demon buzzed and spun in a circle.
Not possible, Silver gasped.
How did she know? Fletcher asked, his eyes widening in wonder.
She must have been watching out for us, probably since Rook showed up, Silver said, smoothing Lovett's hair out on the pillow. We are lucky. We could be dead if it wasn't for her.
If you're all done being amazed, I need help over here,
Othello said in a cracked voice. Fletcher's eyes widened when he saw Attila's leg. Othello had cut through the cloth around it to reveal a jagged hole that streamed with blood. Fletcher had never seen a bullet wound before, and the damage looked far worse than the tiny puncture he had imagined.
We are lucky. The bullet didn't hit any major arteries. The bone is definitely broken, though, so we can't attempt the healing spell. Last time I saw a wound like this, a Pinkerton had shot a young dwarf for not paying them protection,
Othello said, cutting a long strip from the bedsheet using his tomahawk.
The best we can do is dress the wound to stop the bleeding. Lift his leg for me.
They helped Othello wrap the wound until Othello's leg was swathed in a thick band of white bandage. Tenderly, Othello wiped the crusted blood away.
I know Attila seems as racist to humans as many humans are to the dwarves, but he has a good heart. He just has a hot head to match,
Othello murmured, propping a pillow under the sleeping dwarf's head. They stood in silence whilst Othello dabbed at his brother's forehead. Then Silver spoke up.
I think we need to discuss what happened tonight.
I agree, Fletcher said. But we need to get Sarah first. He deserves to know what kind of danger his family might be in.
I'll go, Othello said. I need to get a spare uniform from my room anyway. We will need it if we are to sneak Attila out tomorrow.
He stomped out, followed by a dejected-looking Solomon. Fletcher knew that Othello was probably holding the whole world on his shoulders at that moment. He sat on the side of Lovett's bed, groaning with satisfaction as his tired feet were relieved. He stroked Sariel's head absent-mindedly, and she responded with a rumble of appreciation. Grinning, he scratched her beneath the chin the way Ignatius liked. She rubbed back and yipped with pleasure.
Fletcher?
Silver stuttered. Fletcher looked up and saw that she was blushing, her face and neck flushing with scarlet.
Sorry, didn't think,
he blurted, pulling his hand away. She stood for a moment, then sighed and sat down on the bed next to him.
I never thanked you,
she muttered, twisting her hands together.
For what?
Fletcher asked, confused.
For following me. If you hadn't, Grindel might have caught me again.
I don't know. I think Grindel might have been in for a bit of a surprise. You said Sariel was worth 10 men. That makes it an even fight. If it hadn't been for you, we could be in the middle of a civil war right now. You made the right call. Valens buzzed excitedly and nudged Fletcher's hand.
I think Captain Lovett wants to know what's going on. Tell her what happened in Valentia Square, and I'll let her know what went down tonight.
The story took some telling. Othello and Seraph arrived by the time they had finished it. Seraph was still in his pajamas and squinted in the light.
Othello filled me in on the way,
Seraph said, staring at Attila and Lovett's unconscious bodies.
I just have one question. Why would the Forsythes hire Grindel to kill you that night in Corsilum, but also want to be your friend?
Silver stood and chewed on her lip.
I always thought they wanted my friendship so that they could supply the elves with weapons should alliance be on the cards,
she said, pacing around the room.
But what makes me their enemy?
Why would they want me dead?
I think the real question is, why would they want you executed publicly?
Othello said matter-of-factly.
They could have killed you at any time. Why make such a statement?
To incite a war between the elves and Hominum,
Seraph suggested.
A real one. That would increase the demand for weapons and keep their business afloat, even with the dwarves competing with them.
Fletcher felt a wave of disgust. Starting a war for profit.
So they want the best of both worlds,
he muttered.
If the elves ally with Hominum, the Forsythes plan to secure a weapons contract through their fake friendship with Silver. But they would prefer a war because it would make them more money. They didn't abandon you at the market, Silver. They led you right into Grendel's arms.
Don't say I told you so.
Silver stared at her feet. The room went silent, only broken by Valens's angry buzzing as he flitted to and fro.
Those evil little prigs, Seraph growled. I knew they were up to something, but this is treason. We can't prove anything,
Fletcher cursed, clenching his fists together.
In fact, if we tell the king the whole story, he is more likely to think it was the dwarves committing treason, what with the war council and all. It doesn't matter,
Silver announced.
Their plan is ruined now. I will write to my father tonight and tell him that the Forsythes are not to be trusted. The plot to start a civil war with the dwarves has been foiled, and I am relatively safe at the Citadel. There is nothing they can do to harm us now. Yes, there is,
Seraph cautioned.
The tournament. If one of the Forsythes wins, they will become high-ranking officers and gain a seat on the King's Council. That's an extra vote for Zacharias, and another voice speaking out against my family, not to mention the elves and the dwarves.
Othello nodded, then scratched his beard contemplatively.
Let's not forget that the most powerful people in Hominum will be watching it. The nobles and the generals,
he said, pacing back and forth.
They will be deciding if the elves and the dwarves are worthy allies, then reporting back to the king. We can be sure the Forsythes will be doing everything they can to discredit and embarrass us during the tournament, too. Then we beat them.
Fletcher jumped to his feet.
Who says we can't win the tournament ourselves? We have a golem, a barkling, a canid, and a salamander.
Seraph shook his head. We aren't as powerful as them. Even the second-year commoners will have an advantage over us. How are we supposed to win? Fletcher took a deep breath and looked him right in the eye.
We train.
45. A heavy mist hung around the citadel, fading the horizon into a shadowed whiteness. It gave Fletcher and Attila the cover they needed as they hobbled down the road outside.
I hope Uhtred makes it in time,
Fletcher said.
Rook will be suspicious if I don't turn up for his lesson.
He'll be here. You said Valens delivered the pickup instructions. Just fine,
Attila replied. He was ashen-faced, but had recovered enough to walk, even with a pronounced limp. They had managed to sneak out of the castle with barely any trouble. Tarquin had made a snide comment as they passed on the stairs, asking if the dwarf was limping because someone had stepped on him that morning. Fortunately, with Othello's spare uniform and some quick braiding of Attila's beard, the twin dwarves were indistinguishable. Fletcher's heart leaped in his chest as a shadow darkened the mist in front of them.
It's okay. That's my father,
Attila grunted. A boar emerged from the fog, pulling a chariot behind it. The rider wore a hood, but Uhtred's bulky figure was unmistakable.
Get on, quickly. It is not safe out here,
Uhtred said, pulling the chariot to a halt beside them. Fletcher helped Attila sprawl at his father's feet.
The dwarves are in your debt. If you need anything, anything at all, just ask,
Uhtred rumbled, flicking the boar's reins and turning them around.
Wait, I have something to say,
Attila announced. Fletcher turned back, wary of being late for the lesson that would be starting any minute.
Thank you.
I owe you my life.
Tell Othello, I was wrong.
With those parting words, they disappeared into the mist, until all Fletcher could hear was the echoing clop of the boar's hooves. Fletcher was late to Rook's lesson, but when he arrived in the summoning room, both Rook and Arcturus were there waiting for him, with the rest of the students standing in silence before them. Fletcher noticed that Arcturus was wearing an eye patch. Fletcher couldn't help but smile. With his tricorn hat, Arcturus looked like a pirate captain.
Wipe that grin from your face, boy. Do you think your time is more valuable than our own?
Rook snapped, waving him over to the other novitiates.
I'm sorry, sir,
Fletcher said, standing with the others.
I will deal with him later, Rook, Arcturus said. But perhaps we should get on with the lesson.
Yes, perhaps we should,
Rook said dryly, stepping forward.
With the tournament coming up, we think it is time to demonstrate how a duel works. Now, Arcturus here believes that learning to duel another battle mage is a useless practice.
The orc shamans rarely duel, Arcturus cut Rook off. It is unlikely that you will ever go toe-to-toe with one. They prefer to hide in the shadows and send their demons to do the fighting for them.
A strategy that has served them well in the past. I suspect our battle mage attrition rate is several times what theirs is, but the fact that we fight on the front lines and put ourselves in harm's way is why we are winning this war,
Rook countered.
But that is not dueling, Inquisitor. That is using our abilities to protect and support the soldiers,
Arcturus retorted.
Yet we use the same skills, do we not?
Rook mused, rubbing his chin in mock pensiveness. Fletcher was surprised that the two teachers could argue like this in front of their students. If there was any doubt before, this confirmed it. There was no love lost between the two men. Arcturus sighed and turned to the students.
Regardless of my opinions on the tournament, it has been a tradition since the Battle Mage School was founded 2,000 years ago. Usually, it would take 4 years of training before you were allowed to compete in the tournament. Last year, it was reduced to 2. Now, it is 1. We are lucky in that all of you have been very fast learners. For most novices, it takes 2 years to learn how to perform a basic shield spell. Even you, Fletcher, are ahead of the game. There are plenty of second years who will be unable to form a decent shield.
Fletcher blushed at being singled out, but felt better. At least he wasn't going to come last in the tournament.
Now watch closely, Arcturus said, etching the shield symbol in the air and fixing it in place above his index finger.
He blasted weird light through it and formed a thick, opaque oval shield in front of him.
A shield is always stronger when you brace against the impact of whatever is coming your way, he lectured, crouching slightly and crossing his forearms in the shape of an X. When defending against an attack spell, the blow has a violent effect.
Are you ready?
Rook asked lazily, holding up a glowing finger.
I am.
Light flared in the room as Rook whipped a lightning spell at Arcturus, crackling the air with forks of electric rays. He had been so fast, Fletcher barely saw his finger move. The shield cracked like ice on a lake, emitting loud, sharp snaps with every fracture. Arcturus's face contorted with effort as he fed more mana to the shield, opaque threads flowing like silk to cover the damage. The force of Rook's blast pushed Arcturus back, his feet sliding over the lever. Arcturus extended a finger from his other hand and stirred the air. Then with a roar, he uncrossed his arms and fired a kinetic blast around the side of the shield. Rook was sent flying back, slamming into the wall and sliding to the ground.
That is why a shield spell is the first thing you should do when entering a duel. You may get them on the back foot by attacking first. But if you don't beat them with that first shot, They just need to get one attack spell off whilst you're distracted, and it's over. To attack without a shield is an all-or-nothing move. Arcturus smiled, and the shield dissipated. The light was sucked back into his finger with a soft swish. It's best to recover the mana from your shield where possible, especially for those of you with low-level demons. You will need all the mana you can get if you want to last the tournament. Fletcher heard Rory curse under his breath behind him.
That was a cheap shot, Rook snarled, brushing himself off.
You have been away from the front lines for far too long, Rook,
Arcturus laughed, twirling his moustache.
Even a second lieutenant knows that you need to put a shield up if your first attack doesn't work. It is bullheaded to think otherwise, if you'll pardon the pun.
We'll see what you think of bullheadedness when my minotaur has its claws around your canid's throat,
Rook snarled, taking a step towards Arcturus. The two men glared at each other, their hate unmistakable. They reminded Fletcher of rival hunting dogs straining at their leashes to attack one another. If the novitiates had not been in the room, Fletcher was sure there would have been an illegal duel taking place there and then.
Class dismissed, Rook snapped, striding from the room. It's not like any of you will catch anything before the tournament anyway. Useless, the lot of you!
Fletcher caught Rory grinning. Despite Rook's best efforts, the nobles were yet to come close to capturing new demons. Even with the charging stone, their scrying ability was too poor to control their demons effectively. On the other hand, the commoners could now handle their demons with ease, sending them running and leaping over the obstacle course they had set up in the corner of the summoning room. Fletcher was good, but his small scrying crystal hampered him. He pulled it from his pocket and scrutinized it.
You heard him! Out! Everyone! Arcturus growled.
Not you, Fletcher. Come here. Fletcher slowly walked up to him, waiting to be berated for being late. Instead, Arcturus laid a hand on his shoulder.
Let me see that scrying stone.
Fletcher handed it to him without a word.
You won't win the tournament with this. There are challenges, Fletcher, which will require extensive scrying. I can't lend you my stone. I'm not allowed to show you any favor, and even if I wanted to, Rook is watching me too closely. Sort it out.
Arcturus dropped the crystal back into Fletcher's hand and looked him in the eye.
That's the difference between a good warrior and a great one. Rook fought hard, but he lost that battle. Don't fight hard. Fight smart.
46. The blow came thrumming through the air, slipping past Fletcher's guard and slamming into his collarbone with a painful crunch.
Again!
Sir Calder growled, kicking out at Fletcher's shin with his peg leg before swinging another blow at his head. This time, Fletcher caught the blow with his wooden sword, heaving it aside and kneeing Sir Calder in the stomach. The old man collapsed, wheezing on the sand of the arena.
Fletcher!
Silver shouted from the sidelines.
Be careful!
Sir Calder held up his hand and slowly got to his feet.
It's all right, Silver, he wheezed, rubbing his stomach. A warrior should never hesitate at an opening. Heaven knows the enemy won't.
Didn't you hit Sir Calder in the face just 10 minutes ago?
Fletcher teased.
That was different,
Silver replied with a rueful smile. A yell came from behind them. Fletcher turned to see Othello on top of Seraph, their weapons forgotten on the ground.
No, no, no. You need to learn finesse,
Sir Calder groaned at them.
You can't just lay into each other until one of you has had enough.
The two boys got to their feet, grinning sheepishly. A yellow bruise was blossoming on Seraph's face, and Othello's lip was swollen like a ripe plum.
If you went to the trouble of having Uhtred carve us wooden weapons for practice, you should probably use them,
Fletcher laughed, eyeing the discarded wooden battle axe and broadsword.
We just got a bit overexcited,
Othello admitted, picking up his axe and brushing the sand off. He swung it with practiced ease, spinning it in the air before slamming it into the sand beside him.
Well, you've improved a lot since we started training. I'll give you that, Sekulda conceded. But Silva and Fletcher have already advanced to an exceptional level of swordsmanship. I expect you two might be a match for some of the nobles by now, but it will take a lot more work to surpass them. Good is not good enough.
Sekulda glared at the pair for a while longer, then stomped off towards the arena exit.
Sparring lessons are done for today. You can practice your spellcraft down here if you like. I won't stop you.
The clack of his peg leg against stone faded until he had left the arena.
Well, that's the most praise I've heard out of him, Seraph observed, picking his broadsword up from the ground. Still, plenty of time to improve. We have a couple of months yet. I'm more worried about next week's demonology exam. With all this training, I fall asleep as soon as I open my books. We'll be fine, Othello insisted. I'm yet to see a noble set foot in the library, and even Rory, Genevieve, and Atlas spend most of their time in Corsulum. If we fail, everyone else will too. So, shall we practice some spellcraft? Silva said, stepping onto the sand and flaring a ball of weird light. Why don't you try a fireball this time, Fletcher? I'll throw up a shield over there, and you can use it as target practice.
Fletcher felt his cheeks flush red, embarrassed at his inability to produce even the most basic of shields. He could blast out a wave of fire, telekinesis, or even lightning, which was effective, but wasted a lot of mana. To his chagrin, he still struggled to shape them into a beam or even a ball. Powering a glyph and the spell itself at the same time was too much to hold on his head at once. That being said, he was slowly improving, if not at the rate he had hoped for.
You guys go ahead. You're far more advanced than me. I'll just practice on the sidelines, where I won't get in the way. Okay, if that's what you want, Silva said with disappointment. Boys, why don't you try and hit a moving target?
She hurled a large ball of weird light into the air, sending it zigzagging around the room in a random pattern. Othello laughed and etched a fire symbol, unleashing a tongue of flame that he shaped into a fireball and sent speeding after the blue light. Seraph was not far behind. Fletcher sat dejectedly on the steps, etching the fire symbol over and over again in the air. He had shaved off some time with his etching, able to form a glyph quicker than any of the others. But that was where it ended. He trickled through some mana and watched as a fan of flame roiled out. With a colossal effort, he compacted it into a rough ball. He looked at it in surprise, then hurled it at the weird light before his concentration broke. It shot past the spinning blue sphere, grazing the edge and snuffing it out of existence.
Yeah!
Fletcher yelled, punching the air. Behind him, a slow clap echoed from the arena entrance.
Well done, Fletcher. You managed a spell,
Isadora taunted.
Why, you actually performed one of the most basic of abilities required of a battle mage. Your parents must be so proud. Oh, wait.
Fletcher turned, his elation immediately replaced with outrage. Isadora gave him a dainty wave, skipping down the arena steps. Fletcher was surprised to see the seven other first years trailing behind her into the arena.
So as you can see, we were right.
Tarquin pointed an accusatory finger at Silva, Othello, Fletcher, and Seraph.
They are trading here, in secret. That's why you're never in the common room,
Genevieve exclaimed, tossing her hair with surprise.
You always say you're in the library.
We are, Fletcher tried to placate her.
We just come here afterwards to practice our swordplay with Sekulda. Remember, he offered private tuition to all of us in our first lesson. That didn't look like sword practice to me,
Atlas said, pointing at the empty space above the arena where Fletcher's fireball had snuffed out Silver's weird light.
Sikulda isn't even here.
Why didn't you tell us?
Rory stammered.
You never give me a straight answer when I ask what you've been up to.
Fletcher had no answer for that. It had felt wrong to not include the others. But it would have been too hard to explain, too high a risk of Tarquin and Isadora finding out about what they were doing. Not that it had helped in the end.
Why would they hide it from you?
Tarquin pondered aloud, with a theatrical air.
Perhaps because... No, they wouldn't. Would they?
What do you mean?
Asked Genevieve, her bottom lip trembling.
Well, I'm sorry to say, but it looks as if the other commoners are training in secret to beat you,
Tarquin theorized, shaking his head with mock disgust.
I mean, they haven't a hope of beating us nobles. Let's be reasonable here. But if they can embarrass you three in the arena, it might just snag them a commission.
That's a goddamn lie,
Fletcher yelled, leaping to his feet and rounding on Tarquin.
And if you think we can't beat you, you're more arrogant than I thought.
Why don't we do it right now?
Tarquin brought his face an inch from Fletcher's.
We're in the arena. Plenty of spectators. What do you say?
Fletcher seethed, his hands itching with violent intent.
Plenty of witnesses, more like.
Silver interrupted, pulling Fletcher back from the brink.
So that everyone can say they saw Fletcher duel, and he can get expelled. Don't you care about your own career?
Scipio would never expel me,
Tarquin snapped at her, venom dripping from his words.
It's an empty threat. My father is the king's best friend. It would never get that far. As for a common bastard like Fletcher...
But Fletcher was onto his game now. He wouldn't give Tarquin the satisfaction.
You'll get your duel in good time, when I can beat you with everyone watching. We'll see who's the better summoner then.
Tarquin smiled and leaned in, until Fletcher could feel the noble's breath in his ear.
I look forward to it.
Tarquin swept out of the room, followed by the rest of the nobility. For a moment, Rory hesitated, his face filled with indecision. Atlas lay a hand on his shoulder.
They were caught in the act, Rory. We should have known not to trust the likes of them. A wannabe noble, a bastard, an elf, and a half-man. You don't need friends like them.
Fletcher bristled at the jibe, then realized that by calling Seraph a wannabe noble, Atlas must have overheard Seraph and him talking in the common room.
You've been eavesdropping, Atlas, Fletcher said. That was a private conversation. Oh, yes. I've heard a lot of things these past few weeks. Who do you think told Tarquin and Isadora about your extracurricular activities?
Snake,
Seraph spat, kicking the sand in anger.
What did he promise you? A commission in the Forsyth Furies. If I play my cards right, you two should do the same,
he said, turning to Rory and Genevieve.
You would trust those two snakes,
Fletcher growled.
They're lying to you, and they'll do the same to Rory and Genevieve. Don't do this, please.
But it was too late. Their minds were made up. One by one, they turned their backs on him and walked away. Until the four were alone once again. 47. Sweat dripped from Fletcher's brow as he etched the shield symbol in the air in front of him. He fixed it in place, twirling his finger and watching as it followed his every movement.
Good. Now the hard part,
Silver instructed, her voice echoing in the empty space of the arena. Seraph watched him from the sidelines, having finished his training for the day. His mind felt like it would split in two, as he tried to regulate a flow of mana, both to and through the symbol at once. He was rewarded by a thin stream of white light that hung in the air before him.
That's enough for now, Fletcher. Shape it.
It was easy to pull the fluid into an opaque disc, countless hours of weird light practice finally paying off. It was thinly spread and would shatter after a few sword blows, but it was enough for now. Fletcher sucked the shield back through his finger and felt his body suffused with mana once again. With the tournament just hours away, it would not do to waste any of his mana reserves.